Hello, my name is Mark Tufsik, and I'm an executive director on Family Office Solutions, overseeing our offering around family office design and governance. Family Office Solutions is a dedicated team of specialists who work with our private wealth advisors to deliver holistic advice to clients of exceptional financial success. If you haven't already worked with our team, I encourage you to reach out to your private wealth advisor to learn more about the resources and capabilities. The focus of today's event will be on revisiting the family office expert generalist, which is a term of art which refers to a role of someone inside of the family office that can understand all the interconnectedness of a family's issues, balance sheet, investing, tax, legal, and even, frankly, the family values. Our panelist for today is Seth Gardner. Seth, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, much appreciated. From 20 to 23, Seth served as the COO of a Baltimore-based single-family office and as a senior advisor to the family's first-generation entrepreneur and wealth creator. Previously, he served as both the chief legal officer and COO of the Carlyle Group's credit division, and prior to that, he was MD in the private equity group of Cerberus Capital Management. Earlier in his career, he served as the founding executive director of the Center for Financial Success at Duke University's Business School. He started his career as an attorney at Wachtell, Lipton, Rosen & Katz. He holds 3 degrees from Duke University, a BA, JD, and MBA. He lives in New York City with his wife, Jill, and they have 3 grown children. Seth, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Can you expand a bit on your professional background and experience beyond the headlines that I just gave in the introduction, which is, you know, education, big law, private equity, teaching at a business school, and a family office?
Yes, absolutely. And thank you for this question, because it's foundational to the discussion we're about to have. So, like so many people, perhaps most people, when I was graduating from college, I was uncertain about what I wanted to do for a career, what I wanted to be professionally. But for me, it wasn't that I was trying to identify something specific that I found compelling. Actually, rather, I was enticed by an array of possible career paths, call it jobs or roles, through which I would ultimately be defined professionally. Lawyer, investment banker, investor, professional tennis player. many of them piquing my curiosity and interest. But at the same time, I felt at that time initially that I was required to pick just one to go with for a career. And I struggled with this conundrum. So I decided to get both JD and MBA degrees together, really for 2 reasons. One was to buy myself some more time before I had to make a commitment to what I thought was a single career path. And 2, more importantly, as it turned out, to garner skills and academic foundations in several areas that were simultaneously intriguing to me. So Mark, in retrospect, I realized that these 2 degrees gave me some flexibility and actually also some confidence, such that coming out, I didn't feel as confined to have to choose a singular fixed career to pursue. So real quick. So yes, big law was an obvious first step, which you mentioned. Then followed that with 6 years in private equity. Then a stretch launching and leading the finance center at the business school at Duke. Then into leadership roles at Carlyle, and then into the family office ecosystem, into a family office leadership role specifically. So the point to emphasize is that my career turns and pivots were not the result of indecision or apathy along the way. Actually, for me, I was following my natural curiosity and interest in developing and aggregating skills along the way.
So that kind of leads us into really an expert generalist, right? And so before we dive into really the unique value that they can bring to family offices, and frankly, I would say a requirement for a family office to have, can you define what an expert generalist actually is in a broad sense?
Sure. So just formally speaking for a second, which is not really my style, but we'll just say formally for this one part here. So it commonly is expressed definitionally as an expert generalist, as an individual who possesses acumen and a breadth of knowledge, experience, and proficiency across a wide range of fields, disciplines, skills, and functions. So that's definitionally, it's not terribly helpful, but that's how it's you know, it's understood. So what I like to say more practically and hopefully more usefully, I see an expert generalist as someone who is uniquely capable and adept at adding value to an enterprise on account of, say, six criteria: versatility, to adaptability, cross-functional collaboration skills, problem-solving and pattern recognition abilities, the ability to improvise given unforeseen circumstances, and the ability to identify and capitalize on opportunities.
So when I'm thinking of, when I'm thinking of a family office, I'm thinking, 5 to 8 people for the average family office. I'm not talking for the $10 billion family office with 60 employees. For the average family office, a family has a lot of complexity, interconnected complexity, right? Balance sheet, income taxes, wealth transfer, estate planning, thinking about different investment strategies, different interests that the family or wealth creator may have. You're dealing with a bunch of interconnected issues. If you have one issue, you've probably got 10 other issues. So you're going to make an investment. Where are you making the investment? How are you taking the cash or capital? What are you selling and from where? And how does that affect, wealth transfer, estate planning, cash flow, liquidity, event management, and all that? And so how does the expert generalist really apply in the context of a family office, I guess, is the first question.
So I give Linda Mack a lot of credit for illuminating the value proposition of expert generalists in the context, specific context of family office. So the formal definition of expert generalist that we just discussed is certainly relevant in the context of single family office. But as a leader of a family office who presents as an expert generalist, that person will likely possess a range of skills, proficiencies, and personal qualities bespoke to single family office. Single family offices, and then of course further refined to being a good match and alignment for any specific family. The first thing that I would call out is EQ or emotional intelligence. So it seems implausible to me that a leader of a family office, single family office, could be considered a genuine expert generalist running a high functioning family focused family office and not possess and exhibit high EQ. It's just too fundamental to be absent. So that said, I visualize the ecosystem of a single family office as being on the face of a compass. And so if you have that image in mind, I look at the family of being on the top of the compass, they're pointing north. Then pointing south is the family office itself and the family office team. Looking east, you have wealth management, the family enterprise, if there's one that's relevant, and philanthropy. And then looking west, you have the external advisors and third-party service providers. And that look around, encompasses basically all the various constituencies and, in fact, the distinct constituencies of a family office ecosystem. So to be effective as a leader of a single family office, meaning to be influential and to be able to build trust and maintain trust and credibility, the person that's leading the family office has to possess a range of skills and proficiencies and have a formidable, ideally, base of substantive knowledge and complementary professional experiences to engage with these different constituencies and to be influential, on a one-off basis. So if you have influence in just one or two of the directions, south and east, right, you can readily see that the gaps that could lead to problems in running a high-functioning family-focused family office. Alternatively, and ideally, an expert generalist will, as a definition we talked about earlier, possess the acumen and the breadth of knowledge to be influential in every direction on the compass.
So really, I'm glad you brought up EQ, because you cannot necessarily work at the average family office without it, because you're so client-facing, right? You're going to have a lot of client interaction. And so, I love the analogy to a compass, because you know, you're really looking at it 360 degree views, right? Like you can't just be focused northeast or southwest. You have to really understand how to navigate, you know, all four corners of that. And so, you know, I guess that leads into my next, you know, my next question is, you know, how does the description of an expert generalist apply in the context of a family office? You know, is it the same definition or is it different in some ways? Where the unique skills, experiences, and acumen that would describe a leader of a single family office being an expert generalist? And I know maybe we covered some of this, but just kind of wanted to dig a little deeper here.
Sure. And let me also backfill a little bit more of expert generalist generally, which will then put it in context when we try to refine it down to, you know, thinking about it in terms of a single family office, but they're not unrelated. So someone that has, as an expert generalist, generally speaking, that has familiarity with a whole bunch of functions and proficiencies, and also has recurrent and substantive experience with a collection of specialist advisors, can be uniquely influential and impactful in an organization because that expert generalist is what I like to say is fluent in the multiple languages that are flowing within an organization or enterprise ecosystem. So we all know and embrace the idea of the importance of communication, you know, reading, listening, and otherwise, you know, communicating efficiently. But the thing is that, and again, just using an analogy, the way that different functions and people speak are different variations of business and living, right? So people in IT have different view of the world and different language than the people in HR, than the people in operations, right? And then you port that over to the family, and you have the wealth managers, and you have obviously the family members themselves, and you have the family office team, and then the service providers. So one of the things that I find as an expert generalist is the ability to listen to really understand, but to understand from the perspective that constituent is coming from, and then overlay that with a learned ability to ask the right questions. Because if you are comfortable conversing in the language of that constituency, so to speak, right, you're then able to formulate questions in a way that helps you as the leader translate across the organization. So, you know, let's just go back to now into the family office, single family office specifically. So if we go back to our compass visualization, and let's just focus on the most important thing, which is north, which is the family. And let's just say it's comprised of the elder generation, a leadership generation, and a rising generation. Now, if you pull back, and, you know, it's always a good practice to make reference to Jay Hughes. But doing that and looking at his five essential capitals, spiritual capital, social capital, intellectual capital, human capital, and financial capital, to be effective vis-a-vis pointing north at the family, you have to have the alacrity and the listening skills and the ability to ask the respectful questions, but the right respectful questions, in order to be able to maximize each of these components of the family capital. Right? So, and then if you look at it at the generational level, you have to be astute enough and experienced enough to recognize which generation you're engaging with, what their specific needs are. And this is a lot where the EQ comes in, right? Because you're constantly navigating the different expectations, needs, goals of different generations. So you take that big picture. Now, when you look south and you look at leading and managing a family office team of full-time employees, you need to have the trustworthy and credible in their eyes. And so those are, you know, generalized leadership skill sets that if you've been too hyper-specialized, you may not be able to be able to communicate across the functions that are going on within the family office. And similarly, Mark, when you look east and you look west, and again, just staying with this analogy, you can see that the ability to talk to tax advisors, to talk to wealth managers, to engage with lawyers, to deal with property management, maybe even aircraft type of issues, whatever it is, whatever the specialization is, again, the ability to effectively convey what the family wants and their objectives to the service provider, to the other constituents, so that things get done in accordance with the expectations of the family.
No, I mean, that's exactly right. And I like the term. I think you used, did you use the term nimble or hyper-specialized, or maybe both of them. But, you know, when I talk to a lot of family offices, you've got what I'll call like routine tasks, right? Which is you may have, you know, you're going to do the tax planning, tax preparation every year. And a lot of that is sort of routine, right? Depending on what the family has going on. But families have lots of different interests, and they've got lots of different, especially frankly for first generation wealth creators, they've got a lot of different interests, a lot of different passions. They get excited very easily. And so one day you're walking into the family office and all of a sudden you're, you know, going full speed ahead on some new project that you didn't know about maybe the day prior. And so that's what I always felt that was sort of fascinating yet maddening at the same time being in a family office. But that I think is really where, you know, an expert generalist comes in handy, because you need to really advance the family's goals. You don't know what they are, frankly, from day to day. And each family member often has different goals, objectives, things they're interested in. And so, you know, just to dig a little deeper, I'd like to kick it back to you, but how does an expert generalist add value to a single family office? Maybe it's, you know, some of what you already said, but, you know, how does it enhance the ability to serve the family and to help the family achieve its unique goals and objectives and advance the purpose of the family office? Can you share a few, you know, maybe real world examples here?
Certainly. And before doing so, one other, I think, reference point to flesh out a little bit about this, the concept that we're talking about, is if you look at the work that was been done by David Epstein that he did in the book Range, and in there he talks about this concept of analogical thinking, which involves recognizing parallels between unrelated fields or functions to solve problems. So basically flexible problem solving. And what he says in that book is that generalists are uniquely adept at analogical thinking because they can see the connectivity or the interactions across domains, across functions, which enhances problem solving skills. So to your question and to your point, whether it is a first generation wealth creator where there can be some accelerated activity because you really only have one decision maker, but certainly in complex multifamily situation, multi-generational with multiple branches, I come back to the problem solving and the listening, and not to be redundant about it, but it doesn't do anybody any good if you think that you know what somebody wants or that you've been trained to do it one way. And so proverbially, you know, all you have is a hammer, then everything looks like a nail, which can't be the case, should never be the case within a family, because families are sui generis by definition. So it really highlights the need to be able to interpret, understand, and ask the right questions, right, so that the family is getting what it is that they expect. And it doesn't even have to be that the family is on the first cut saying exactly what they want, because not everybody knows. But through the art of listening and asking questions, pulling from a wide experience level, you're then able to home in on with an alignment. And then once you have the alignment with the family, then the job becomes being able to transfer that knowledge, right, to to the different constituencies. So when you talk to the lawyers, right, whether it's tax planning or whether it's a transaction or whether it's estates or generational planning, that you're able to then take, right, the family values and expectations, and if it needs to be then turned into a legal document, but that the legal document is reflective of what the family wants, not just straight up legalese, right? So that when a gift comes in or when a transfer comes in, it's understood to be a gift and not just outright transfer. And if the family wants that, then there's a way of making sure that that gets done in practice. There's other, you know, myriad examples where, for example, I was asked to do something where I hadn't done it before, right? In all candor, and the leader just said, "Go figure it out," right? And so it wasn't really a problem because I was able to say, "Well, I haven't done this before, but like David Edgerton said, I've done this and this and this, so I can vector in and solve this, and I know then to ask what questions I need to ask of the people that are specialists in that, right, in order to get done what the family member expected."
So long story short, you're not just making widgets at a family office.
Hopefully not. You know, I mean, right? I mean, they're dynamic and organic, and I actually use the word organic because it's real people, right? It's not institutional, certainly not at the discrete single family office level. There's real emotions, there's real governance that needs to get done, there's real transition and rising gen types of dynamics. So nothing really is the same for very long.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think as professionals, you know, you naturally come to view a family office in buckets, almost like, you know, finance, tax, legal, accounting, but it's really at the end of the day, you're advancing a family's interests, a family's initiatives, you know, in what the family wants to do, which is, you know, informed by their values, influenced by their philosophies and things like that. So it's not necessarily dropped in a neat bucket. And I would actually go so far as to say family offices exist because there's a market failure of any external firm that can do a lot of this well. That doesn't mean you can't outsource, but there's really no external firm, in my opinion, just because of the way professional service firms are built, right? You're built to subspecialize upon subspecialize, you know, whether that's across tax, legal, accounting, and even investing. And so really a family office is the only environment or offering out there for a lot of these families that have any sort of complexity. Okay.
I think that's 100% right. And that said, there are service providers and advisors in the family office ecosystem that are outstanding at their work, right? I mean, there are people that work exclusively with Rising Gen, and it's not something that as an expert generalist, I would be the, see myself as being the one to provide the coaching and the day-to-day guidance to Rising Gen, but incorporating that expert, that specialist into the specific family office and identifying the specific needs and being a very good translator, as I say, you know, and being fluent is where the magic happens.
Yeah. No, I would completely agree. So let's get even more specific. You know, you've got this term expert generalist, and that translates into essentially a person. It's a person that can see around corners. They can incorporate, you know, a lot of different facets to help families really just advance their goals, objectives, interests, you know, passions, projects, whatever you want to call it. But if you're looking to incorporate this type of person, this type of professional into a family office, where should families look to get their expert generalists, right? Should you hire only proven expert generalists, which on some level, frankly, sounds like an oxymoron. Where should they find this person? Like, what is a profile if you're going to go look and say, this is the type of person we need? And I think it's probably a summary of a lot of this, but I just wanted to put that out there. Should they only hire proven expert journalists?
So I would always start with EQ, as you and I vigorously agreed with before, because you could have all the other skill sets and fit squarely within the definition of an expert journalist and still not be effective inside a single family office if the EQ profile is not aligned with the family. So the screening for that and that kind of fit is key. I also have somewhat of a bias, and I suspect that you may agree with that, that lawyers are sometimes underutilized internally in family offices. So you don't have that many occasions of seeing general counsels inside of a family office. And in some sense, it's understandable when you're trying to keep costs down. But my bias arises from not that there's something, you know, necessarily so erudite about being a lawyer, but where I found it to be particularly effective is at issue spotting. And as you said, seeing around corners or seeing through walls, where, you know, a lawyer is you know, so often trained to avoid the missteps, to know what the oops could be if you don't do things a certain way. And it's not about saying no, it's about saying yes, but. And I think that the legal training and experience is something that is very helpful in terms of not just problem solving, but problem anticipation. So kind of prophylactic problem solving. And then I would look to the educational background and the amount of time that they've spent in any particular function, right? So while it may be somewhat intangible or inchoate to identify an expert generalist per se, it's easier to identify somebody that is a specialist, right? And if you're looking for an expert generalist, then somebody that's been doing the same thing and may even be on a path to mastery, which is fantastic, you know, kind of thing in terms of being able to utilize that person perhaps. But if you're looking for the expert generalist that can pivot and jump and go from, you know, in a decathlon doing all the different events, then somebody that's been doing one thing their whole career probably doesn't have the breadth of differentiating experiences and working in different languages, right? Because you have to, right? If you're only doing one thing and you're only speaking the same language every day, it's not a natural thing to be able to say, well, I can see through walls and I can communicate with IT and I can communicate with the service provider and I can communicate with the fund managers, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that, you know, and oftentimes these positions are intermediated by a sophisticated recruiting firm. And you will often see the reference to an expert generalist in these, particularly for a leadership position, because again, it's recognized the value of a person that presents and can execute as an expert generalist.
Yeah, no, I mean, I would share your, and you were spot on earlier, I would share your bias about an attorney, and maybe it's because I am one, I don't know, but you know, when I think about it, you know, to your point, it goes back to the legal education. It's legal education is about spotting the issue and finding the rule that's really going to give you, right, that governs the situation, and it doesn't, that is, it's sort of you know, the rule that applies in any given situation really just depends on that given situation. And so that's sort of, you know, I know that sounds amorphous, but I think, you know, depending on what context you're operating in, right, there's going to be a lot of different rules and different ways to analyze things depending on the situation, which is a family. You know, you're not operating in a vacuum or a silo. You're operating in one, you know, essentially room that incorporates all of that. And so, well, hey, Seth, I appreciate the conversation today. You know, I thought this was a great way to really revisit Linda Mack's expert generalist article that she had, you know, I don't know, it was maybe 10 years ago at this point. And so I just think it needed, I think we needed to add to it. I think we needed to revisit it. And so, you know, if there's anybody out there that has any questions, please don't hesitate to reach out, you know, with any questions, comments. And so we look forward to that. Again, Seth, I appreciate the time today.
It's been great. I appreciate you having me, and I look forward to talking again.
Perfect. You're welcome. Thank you.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreement and disclosures that we provide to you about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary or ask your UBS financial advisor for a copy.